The other thing I don't know is kind of the current state of the college football playoff and who should be number one, Bama or Texas. Helping us make sense of everything, David Ubben, national college football writer for The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter at David Ubben, U-B-B-E-N. David, what's up, man? Thanks for making time for us.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Appreciate you, man.
Let's start. I found myself with all the baseball that was on. No, you know what? It was Monday night during the doubleheader of Monday Night Football that they were showing a replay of Bama, Georgia, and I watched the whole second half. Even though there were two NFL games on, I was watching a replay of Bama, Georgia. What'd you make of that game, and will we see that again?
I mean, one of the best games of the last, you know, 5 or 10 years. It's definitely on the short list. You got two teams that obviously are national title caliber, and a 28-point comeback, and then that team taking that punch and fighting back and winning it at home. Anytime you get a game where you get, you know, shots of crying fans from both sides, you know you got an instant classic. So, I think if I'm a betting man, I think we do see that game again, just because I think the list of teams that can beat those two teams is pretty short. And I'm not sure that those two teams are going to play anybody that does beat them before they get a chance to beat one another, either in the SEC championship or the playoff. I'm not sure that they're going to play again in the SEC championship. I suspect Texas will take care of business and get there and keep Georgia out, especially with the way that Georgia's schedule stacked up. But I think Georgia's going to get in and kind of be on the bottom half of that bracket. I wouldn't be surprised if they lose one more game and then have to go on the road in round one of the playoff. And, well, Godspeed to whoever's hosting Georgia in the opening round of the playoff.
I mean, dude, so are you telling me like the non-Power 5 team might get Georgia at home? Like, are we talking about the Bulldogs rolling into Liberty or something?
No, that team will probably have the 12 seed, but it's probably going to be somebody maybe like a Penn State. You know, they might get stuck in that 8-9 game. I doubt they would do that with maybe Notre Dame, maybe like Clemson, you know, whoever finishes second in the ACC.
Clemson already got worked by Georgia.
Yeah, they look pretty good. I mean, it's going to come down to Clemson and Miami for the ACC. So whoever loses that game, it might be them. So I'd say those are three. Penn State, Notre Dame, the loser of the ACC championship might be hosting Georgia in round one.
You look at Georgia going to Alabama, I mean, playing against Alabama, and Kalen DeBoer, that was one of those reputation-building games for him. Following up Nick Saban to beat him, how much good did he do for his reputation?
Well, it's hard. I mean, there's sort of two versions of reputation, right? There's the people who really follow college football, who have seen Kalen DeBoer win everywhere he's been, make a huge impact as a coordinator at Indiana, win at Fresno, win at Washington. These guys, you know, not to say nothing of what he did at the NAI level and winning national championships at Sioux Falls, and you know, they're playing with the same level of players that they had down there that a lot of the other teams do. So these coaches that really are perpetual winners at every level tend to do well when they get up and they start getting better players. So now you're seeing him.
But, David, you know if he had lost that game in Alabama, they don't care about what he did before.
Probably not, especially if you blow a 28-point lead. So yeah. On some level, there's something to that. But I think for people who really pay attention to college football, the level-headed among us, I don't know that he had to do a ton to, you know, validate his reputation. The same guy who coached Washington to the national title game last year, won the Pac-12, beat an Oregon team that was probably more talented than him, than his team, twice, once on a neutral field. But, yeah, you're right. I think for the casual fan, for the Alabama fans that are sort of skeptical at this Northerner coming down to Alabama and winning some ball games, I think it probably helped him a little bit. It's always good to, you know, if you had to choose one, you'd rather win your first big game than lose your first big game. But he's been around the block. He might be a new name to casual fans, but people who pay attention to college football, you're very aware of Kalen DeBoer. And so, you know, I think he's a guy that is pretty level-headed, certainly a little bit less intense than Nick Saban, but sort of a quiet killer, and we're kind of seeing. I mean, the stuff they had schemed up in that first half, Georgia's defense was, you know, all over the place. They had them on their heels for the entirety of that game, and they just didn't really know what hit them. They had some good answers, made some good adjustments at halftime, but sometimes Having guys like Brian Williams on your roster is enough.
I mean, what a special, special player. Talking with David Ubben here on the BetQL guest line, national college football writer for The Athletic. The Bama-Georgia game has kind of dominated the conversation so far, understandably. But when you do zoom out a little bit from just that game to the top 10, I guess nowadays the top 12 matters more. Bama and Texas have kind of split the vote between the AP and the coaches poll. You got Ohio State right behind there. It's seemingly been relatively quiet for the Buckeyes. They're kicking ass and taking names, but not a lot of attention's being paid because of all these other big games going on. When do the Buckeyes play somebody that we're all going to pay attention to? What have you thought of Ohio State's start?
Well, I don't know that this Iowa team and their defense is as good as people think. So this week's not it. But going to Oregon, you know, next week, that's a pretty big one. You know, we've seen those two teams play in non-conference before. They lost in Columbus last time that those two teams played. But this will be a conference game. That'll be a great one. You know, they get Penn State 3-something weeks after that. You know, we'll find out. I mean, at this point, this is kind of what I like about the 12-team playoff is as much as college football has been fueled by debate and hypotheticals and who is better between Alabama and Texas and who is better between Ohio State and, Georgia, whatever, we don't have to really argue that anymore. It's going to be settled on the field. And I think especially, you know, how good is this Ohio State team? I think they probably have the most talented roster on paper, but you got to prove it. You got to pass some of these tests. So I think for me, you know, as you sort it out, I'm a big what have you actually done guy when I'm ranking teams. Texas winning at Michigan is pretty good, but I still think Alabama beating Georgia is the best win for anybody all season. So they'd probably get that number one spot for me. Probably have Texas number two, maybe Tennessee three, and Ohio State four, because Ohio State literally has played no one yet. So there's something to be said for dominating the way that they have. But, you know, we'll start to find out this week. We'll get a kind of a clue at home against Iowa, but to Oregon, you know, if you win that game, especially if you can win that game convincingly, I mean, whoever wins that game, you're going to be moving up in the polls a little bit. That'd be a huge win.
For sure. B, you're going to like this. Our friend Drew, who's a Bama fan, of David, of your analysis of the Bama-Georgia game, he says, come on, man, Alabama led up. Otherwise, that game wouldn't have been close. Roll Tide. That's
Drew,
Bama fans.
They didn't let up, Drew. They didn't let up at all.
Played Georgia and said, you know what? It's only Georgia on the other side of the field. Let's take the foot off the gas a little bit.
Exactly.
I think ultimately – you know, they were doing some things with Jalen Milroe and some misdirection stuff, and I think Georgia caught on to some of that. They were able to slow down their defense. You can say they let up. I mean, certainly they were less aggressive offensively, but you can't really say you let up defensively. That's not really a thing. And they were getting toasted in that second half. Well, more so in the fourth quarter by Carson Beck. He got hot. Receivers are making some plays. That bust over the top to Dylan Bell for them to go up. I mean, that was a huge play. Not the greatest throw I've ever seen Carson Beck make, but 6 points is 6 points. So
sure.
No, I don't buy the let up. Maybe slightly less aggressive on offense, but there's a whole other side of the ball that seemed to have you having some issues with Georgia's squad.
David, let's go to Rocky Top. The Volunteers look good. They're now number four in the country. They just went into Norman and out physical the Sooners, which wasn't how I expected them to win that game. What do you make of Tennessee? What do you make of this rookie quarterback, freshman quarterback, whatever they call first-year players in college now? I don't know how to say it. Nico Iamalavea.
Iamalava, not close, but we'll learn before too long.
Don't worry, David. He's like that most time with names.
The good thing about Nico is he has such a unique name that it is a little bit like a Madonna situation where he can just go by Nico. But it is Iamalava. I think the thing about this Tennessee team that jumps out is, you know, Tennessee, especially under Josh Heupel, they bring in the Baylor offense and people see the shots downfield and they think, oh, that's, you know, they're really explosive. Well, this team got one of the two or three best running offenses in the country. You know, the offensive line has done a really nice job. They won that game in Norman, by the way, without both starting tackles, which is pretty impressive.
Wow.
And then they've got if not the best defensive lines in the country, headlined by James Pierce, who might be one of the three or four best NFL prospects in the country. So this is a team that people who don't maybe pay attention to college sports think, well, they're just going to throw it around the yard, and it's all Nico. Nico doesn't have to be Superman, and he might be Superman anyway, but they've got a really solid running game. You know, going into that Oklahoma game, they were the only team in the country that had run for 1,000 yards in the first three games of the year. So this is not a team that's just throwing it all over. I mean, this offense is built around the running game, but this is a team that has a defense that's much improved from that 2022 team that was kind of having to outscore a bunch of people with Hendon Hooker, and the defense wasn't that great, and they're young in the secondary, but those guys have stepped up. But this defensive line is a terror, and that was a big reason why, you know, they played so conservatively at Oklahoma, a game that, you know, was separated by 10 points, but it might as well be 100. That was not a competitive game. Because Oklahoma, I mean, Tennessee figured out very quickly that Oklahoma couldn't block them. They weren't going to be able to score 20 to make that game competitive at any point. And so they took the gas, they took their foot off the gas offensively because they had some field conditions, but also without those tackles, you know, they didn't feel comfortable about being able to protect Nico, who's obviously a pretty important part of that team. So they're really a complete Tennessee team. They don't have any obvious weaknesses. We'll see. You know, if that secondary can hold up as they start playing better offenses. But that defensive line is no joke. I mean, it's pure talent, a ton of experience there. And then, you know, their receiver group, probably one of the three or four best receiver groups in the country. You know, you got Brew McCoy, kind of your headliner. Dante Thornton, the Oregon transfer is coming through. Chris Brazell, they added from Tulane. Squirrel White still hanging around there. And you know, this is a team that, just like I said, they're really good at a lot of things and don't seem to have a lot of weaknesses, and that's how you ascend to the top five.
You look at the top 12, it's a lot of SEC teams, and I know they've been trying to expand this playoff thing. If this thing were to end like this with all these SEC teams, anybody outside of the SEC that you think could really push them?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, we'll see what Ohio State is. I mean, Ohio State's definitely a team that's is as talented as anybody in the country. I don't think we know what Miami is just yet. I'm skeptical. I think Oregon could probably beat just about anybody as well. They've got some things to prove. Outside of that, I don't know. I mean, I think the playoff is going to be interesting because I like the fact that all of these regular season games this first month of the season are very relevant in sorting out the playoff field, whether that's from the G5, whether that's from the ACC, the Big 12 title races. I don't think the ending is going to be that much different. You know, you're going to have the same teams hoisting it hoisting the title trophy as we've seen for so long. But I like the fact that they're having to earn it on the field and that teams are, you know, having a chance to play for it and losing games on the field and not just having a committee decide, well, you're not as good to even get a chance to play for it. I like that. I might do 8 instead of 12, but I'm still am a fan of the 12-team playoff.
Let's get a little local here, or quasi-local anyway. Penn State off to a hot start. They did beat Illinois, but their next four games, UCLA at home, at USC, at Wisconsin, then Ohio State. What is Penn State's record going into that matchup against the Buckeyes?
I'll say 6-1. I mean, I don't know that they're going to go knock off USC. I think if that game's in Happy Valley, they probably win it. But I still think, you know, the biggest thing for Penn State is when I watch their games, I see receivers that are actually open. And they didn't upgrade the personnel that much. I mean, it's a big reason why I've been such a huge fan of Andy Kolmicki coming over from Kansas, their OC. I mean, Kansas doesn't have all-world athletes, and they were able to scheme guys open, had one of the most electrifying offenses in the country. And you look at what Kansas is doing offensively since he left, it has been bad. They are one of the most disappointing teams in the country. I think they're sitting there at 1-4 right now. And Kolmicki's influence leaving that program and coming into Penn State is a big part of that. I think just offensively in the passing game, just way more creative, being able to get guys open. If you watched those Michigan and Ohio State games last year against those elite defenses, it was hard to watch. And Drew Aller didn't play well, and he had, there's a million things you could pick on from what he did. But the reality is they couldn't run the ball, and the receivers were not getting open. So if you want to put all that at Drew Aller's feet, you can. He's got to be better, but there was not a lot of margin for error for him. And I think what Andy Kolmicki does when he comes in there is introduce a little bit more margin for error. Be a little more creative. Let's find a way to run the ball and have some misdirection and do some things that create some easy yards, get guys open, keep defenses on their toes. And then I think the lack of creativity in that scheme the last couple of years has been preventing Penn State from even being competitive in some of those games that decide how your season is remembered. And so I like Penn State to get in the playoff. I think they're probably 7-1 going into that game. I think they get to the end of the season 10-2, 11-1, and are sitting pretty pretty confident going into Selection Sunday.
Is it possible we could see a defensive player win Heisman Trophy this year?
Specific one.
Yeah.
Travis Hunter.
I mean, that depends on if you want to define Travis Hunter as a defensive player, you know, because he does.
Well, a guy with multiple skills. Let's say, like, other than a quarterback. Somebody other than a quarterback.
Sure. I mean, this is true, but he also, you know, is what? I think he's like seventh in the country in receiving yards, too. So, I mean, the thing with him is, you know, he's a guy that last year it was probably a little bit overrated in terms of his coverage skills. Last year, when you looked at the quarterback rating when he was targeted, I think he was 97th among 150-something cornerbacks that played 250 coverage snaps. 106th in yards per reception. This year, there's 134 Power 4 cornerbacks who played 100 coverage snaps. He's given up 13 catches on 19 targets. He's 15th in the country in yards per catch, 14th in quarterback rating allowed. He's only been targeted once every 8.5 coverage snaps. That's 21st least frequent. That is a marked difference from a year ago. He was a really good receiver and an overrated cover guy who made some really incredible interceptions a year ago. This year, he's been as good as about any receiver in the country, and he's been an elite cornerback, basically a real shutdown corner.
He won the Baylor game.
He's gotten a lot better. He really did. Yeah, he really did. And he's taken a huge step forward, especially in coverage. And he's kind of, his MO is playing defense a little bit more, but I think at this point he's a better receiver. But if he keeps improving like he has from year one to year two at Colorado, I mean, that might change pretty quick. So he's incredible, and he's something that we have not seen in this sport, and I hope he's able to stay healthy for us to keep witnessing this, because, you know, I think we wrote a profile of him and went down to Atlanta and talked to a bunch of people that know him, and after that TCU game last year, we did write a story talking about, hey, this guy's the Shohei Ohtani of college football, and he's only gotten better at that and become more impactful on both sides of the field this year. So he's my Heisman frontrunner. We do a Heisman straw poll. He got my vote this week.
All right.
My top spot, and I think that's the case. I think he had 19 to 25 first place votes on our staff. So he's the front runner right now.
Speaking of front runners, JMU, I'm getting hyper local now. James Madison has scored 130 in their last two games. They hung up 70 on Carolina. Just give me a yes or no, because we got to get out. But would they be your front runner to be the non-power five, power four, however many powers there are left? Like, where are they in the playoff hunt?
They're hovering. Boise's the best team. They've got a loss, okay, but Boise's the best team. UNLV might be right ahead of JMU, but JMU, in my bubble watch, I think I had them third.
Okay. Right, hey, man. David, appreciate this is great, David. Man. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, guys.
All right, brother.
That's our guy, David Ubben from The Athletic.
You didn't mess it up.
Give him a follow at David Ubben, UBBEN. Really good college football stuff there.
Yeah.